All right, welcome back, Brandstack Sunday. We are looking at the economy, COVID and beyond, with economist Dr. Kevin Greenidge, economist today on call. Good morning, Corey and Dr. Greenidge. Since there is so much less being paid into the NAS right now because of people not working or working as much, what is the plan when people retire in the short and medium term and are relying on the NAS to have funds paid to them? Does the NAS have enough funds to cover those who are leaving the workforce?
So Corey, two things on that. The NAS got three funds, type of funds. Yeah, one is the unemployment fund, one is the severance payment, the other one, I can't remember the name. But it's only the unemployment fund that is under pressure right now. To both the tune, huh? Because of the impact of COVID, the NAS had a bill over 100, and I don't remember it's under over 150 million, 55 million in unemployment benefits, yes. And according to the NAS law, the government have to recapitalize, we say, but basically help them bring that fund back up the level. Okay. And like I say, a plan is being put in place and to do that over a period of time, a small, short period of time. So I don't think persons have anything to worry about at all. And in fact, you will see that the government has been committed prior to the and we do this every 2 years, an actual review of the NAS position. Account to that actual review, you would do the government would do going to make any recommendations to ensure the long-term viability and sustainability of the scheme. So I don't think personally an issue to worry about. Yes, it is hard on a government purse, but we gotta do what we gotta do. Okay, so I
So the
don't
money
think
for pension and the pension fund, where does that money come from? Because I assume that comes from people paying in. And what the writer is asking is, with less people paying in at this time, where is the money going to come from in the future? So where does the money from the pension fund, where does that come from?
funds from expanding and then NAS as the investments it does in other areas, etc. So a lot of those things are together, investments, bill paying, etc. What I'm saying to you is that when a deficit exists in any particular area, government has to cover the deficit. The question, can government do that? And at the moment, because of the war and the buffers, yes, they can. We just have to be we have to devise a strategy to do it in a very prudent and meaningful way.
All right, there's a next question on the whole idea of pension as well. It says, good morning, Mr. Moderator. Please ask Kevin Greenidge, what is next for the pensioners who were robbed by the restructuring of the economy? I need my money to pay taxes and surgery, please. Everyone else was taken care of. What do you say to that pensioner? Other pensioners thinking like that?
Well, so first of all, I mean, my memory don't always fail me. I don't think it failed me yet. I don't know what I mean by rob, because even where only debt restructuring persons, creditors took a haircut, etc., pensioners get back all their money. So I cannot subscribe to a term of rob. I don't know if you talk work. I would be lost. You have to tell me an instant that. And I envision going, and there's no plans going forward that will be adversely affect pensioners. So the caller asked me a big question. I don't
The only
understand
thing I remember with the haircut was the with the bonds or
it. I remember
treasury
immediately
papers
after that,
they got back.
the government ensured that they got back the further months, and persons didn't have to wait.
Or if that person's listening, if you could send some context to the question, be sure to have Dr. Greenidge answer that for you. Let's go back to the telephone lines. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning to you, Mr. Lee,
Right, good morning and welcome.
and to your guests. I will be brief. I will make a suggestion, and then I will answer, pose the question that your guest. Can't remember his name. Right. I would like the government to the government the Prime Minister make a statement at the press conference about utility companies actually giving customers time to pay the bills. I still see in a long line at Sure Pay, so I believe that either people ain't really certain. So I would like people to be reassured by either the Prime Minister at a press conference or some of these personnel at these utility companies coming out and reassuring the public that they are not going to cut off their utilities before giving them the time to pay, you know? Right. Now, my question to the gully gentleman, I want to know, I can remember last time it was the value-added tax that worked for Mr. Arthur. He said that the government, it made more money than he thought, right? That he didn't really even have to even bring a budget. So I want to ask you, sir, if it is the sewage tax now is actually helping the government in a way that the value-added tax to helping Mr. Arthur. I will put there and listen. Thank you.
Go ahead, Dr. Greenwich.
I'm not sure. Hey, thanks, Greg. I'm not sure if I follow the question. Helping
him. He's asking the same way that VAT was a savior for Mr. Arthur, where he said he had collected more than he expected. If this government is expecting the sewage waste tax to be that VAT back, like how VAT was back in that.
No, but sewage waste tax, we didn't collect, you're not collecting more than you expected. And that's for a specific purpose, as the title suggests, sewage and garbage support.
All right, next caller. Brass Stacks, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Leon and Mr. Greenwich.
Good morning and welcome.
Yeah. Mr. Greenwich, I have a question for you. Since you are an arm or a part of the IMF, I would want you to explain to me and other listeners like myself what the IMF mean when they say that there is going to be a pension restructure based on the actuarial science going to them. What exactly do they mean? What you can explain it to me?
Yes, please.
Before you answer, Dr. Greenwich, I want to throw in a specific question relating to this so we can cover all one thing. Good morning, Corey and Dr. Greenwich. As a public officer of over 24 years in my 50s, how would pension reform affect me? So I want you to put those two questions together and answer one thing.
How would pension reform affect the person, you say?
Yeah, how would pension reform affect, which is very similar to what this call is asking. So why don't you put the two together?
No problem. So first let me start, you call us here that say that
so I need to put those two questions together.
Okay, just got some feedback. Thanks, Corey and Corey. Corey, so let me just make sure it's clear my role. But he said I'm an army IMF. So I am not an arm of the IMF. I employed by the IMF as staff. I am on leave to work for the government of Barbados. So I am fully arm and leg of the government of Barbados as an advisor. I don't speak for the IMF. No, but I can explain what is meant by what he asked in terms of pension reform. Now, remember, one thing you understand is that this is Barbados Recovery and Transformation Program. It's designed by Barbadians, the government team get together in consultation with the IMF on different issues. And one, so you have to do structural reforms. And one thing that we say we will do, because we do it every 2 years, is to do an actuary study. And then come with the actuary study, and I can need some water, is a white paper that will go to cabinet to discuss the recommendations from that study. And then cabinet will decide if, based on those recommendations, what reforms should be put in place or adopted. That, what I just told you, is exactly what the Barbados economic team would have told the IMF that we intend to do. And so a part of the IMF report, when they report on page 57, the last report, they say this. And the back of the report is a document that comes from the government of Barbados to the IMF, and they attach it to the report. And that document say, we will, who is we? The government of Barbados. We, and this government of Barbados speaking, we will review the civil service pension scheme to address long-term sustainability. This is what we say. It is a public document. To this end, we, meaning the government of Barbados, will table empowerment and revised pension law by end of June. I know we have to look and see if that date is proper given a pact, but this will happen before COVID, to inform the actuary review that is expected by end of November 2020. That review end of November 2020 then. And here we're going to say, we, meaning the government of Barbados speaking, will prepare a pension white paper and discuss in cabinet. So the point is, I'm trying to say, it's not, and I hear a lot of talk about this, and the IMF can say, we're going to do a pension reform. Well, the IMF will know we're going to do a pension reform or not. Would they know about our pension system, or what we're doing? It is a discussion we have with them, and we committed to doing certain things on the program to improve government sector and government business. And pension is just part of that, the NIS review. I hope that's clear.
And the caller still there? Okay, he's not there. Because sometimes when they're there, we will chat back in with them to see if it is clear for them. But he not being there, we're going to move on. Particularly when it comes to this whole idea of tourism, because I'm receiving a number of messages with that. I'm going to link about two of them and see if we can get an answer for on the whole tourism and the economy at this stage. He says, can Dr. Grenin speak in percentage term to the degree in which agricultural production has grown and what kind of capital projects the government is... No, let me leave that one for later. Let me get into this one. Tourism brings in 60% of reserves or foreign exchange, to put it that way. What percentage of foreign exchange is used by tourism in imports and repatriation of funds? Now, I want to link that to these other two messages. Corey, my dear friend, Dr. Greenidge is not of the view that agriculture can replace tourism because he looks at tourism as a net foreign exchange earner. But he needs to look at the amount spent to make tourism a reality, both in terms of providing food for tourists, the advertising and flight of capital to pay the hotel owners who are not local. How do you speak to that?
Unless I miss something, you call that actually answer, you know, because that foreign exchange contribution is a net. That is outflows minus inflows from the tourism sector. But beyond that, whether it's a tourist, a Bajan, or somebody coming back in, we all import. And we estimate that we import about 70 to 80% of what we consume. Okay, even here, because the sector is going to import the inputs. You're going to import different things. So the tourism is a net foreign exchange earner. We sell over 60% contribution to our foreign exchange. Agriculture, and I'm not even sure why we will be discussing replacing. Agriculture has a role in itself, in my view, in terms of food security. We should be aiming to become sustainable, self-sufficient as it relates to our agriculture sector, etc. Right? That's a totally different role from tourism in the provision. So you call that answer the question in terms of is a net. So it's a net position. A net amount that going to kitty foreign reserves is about 60% from the tourism sector.
Right. I get where he's asking. I get that the answer is in there when you say net. So yes, you do spend money. You have to build out the infrastructure. You need to import various things, and then at the end you meet and you need to see what's the balance at the end of it. One of the things I think that we are very poor in the Caribbean, something that I've looked at over the period of time, is data and research. We rely on a lot of data from elsewhere as opposed to ourselves. If we were able to show people in a dispassionate way figures, facts in relation to what is the true position. So for instance, 120 square foot of agriculture nets X amount, whereas 120 square foot in a room in a hotel costs 500, and to put tomatoes, potatoes, whatever, net, and be able to show and even show the spin-off, because it's not that simple. I think that people may have a greater appreciation of what it is you're doing. And again, I agree with you and the writers. I don't think there should be this civil war between the two or three. I think that each needs to play its part. Each needs its investment and attention by the policymakers and the decision makers so that they can grow. And I think that would be the output of what we talk over 30 years about diversifying the economy. A lot of people think diversifying means you take out something and put in something. What it means is that you just increase all the different sectors. And that's one of the things I think I would really like to get across to listeners. So we're going to take more of your calls and more of your messages on this edition of Brass Tax Sunday, looking at the economy, COVID, and beyond, in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
Who's got conduits, fittings, dimmers, switches, ballasts, bells and brackets? We do. Williams. Who does wiring, installations, maintenance for homes and business? We do. Williams. From electrical contracting and maintenance to consumer products, Williams Electrical should be your first stop for all things electrical, including UL-approved products of proven quality. Who's got the know-how just for you? Electrify service to you. We do. Williams Electrical.
Welcome back, Brass Stacks Sunday. Let's go right back to the phones and say good afternoon and welcome to the next caller. You're on the air. Welcome. Welcome, caller.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Hello, Corey, and hello, Dr. Greenwich.
Oh, dear. There's a big voice on the economy here, boy.
No trouble today.
I can sit back. I sit him back.
I'm not poking at Dr. Greenwich today like I did last time. I'm not poking Dr. Greenwich. I know you can handle it anyhow. This just two observations, more or less. I think the second one is quite important. So it's the first. Since we're talking about numbers, Dr. Greenwich quoted numbers before, and he's absolutely right. I am looking at the same numbers, and I was following him as he spoke. And I saw nothing wrong with what he was saying at all. So I'm going to move away from the takeaway from all of that, though, is this. It's a very simple thing for the general public to understand, and it is this. Dr. Greenwich, I'm not going to use the $500 million loss for revenue for the fiscal period. I'm going to use the calendar year. Right? The government lost $770 million in the last calendar year in revenue. That's the revenue is down $770, give or take, you know. Mistakes for rounding errors and what have you. But the thing to take away from that is this. The fact that government has lost that amount of money is not really the relevant thing. The relevant thing is that government's revenue, the majority of it, comes from taxes. Other than $160 million odd in non-tax revenue. So if the government is losing that kind of money, in taxable income, you can understand how much the domestic private sector is losing. So it is not, let us not focus on the government's loss of revenue, but understand that government only takes a part of private sector's revenue. And if they're down $770 million over the calendar year, understand what is going on with the domestic private sector. They're getting crucified. That's the takeaway from those numbers. I can just run through quickly, Dr. Greenwich, because the second part, I think, is more important than that. The second part, my second thing is this. It's a numbers thing again. The central bank report, I think, is mistaken. I would like to think it is not, but I believe it is, according to my arithmetic. And it is this. Central bank quoted the primary balance at 2.8%. Right? Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because it is repeated a lot. But the primary balance can only be 2% of GDP if it is using GDP for the calendar year. But it is using the nominal amount of the primary balance for the fiscal year. So that gives you a wrong figure of 2.74. Well, that's my number, sorry. 2.8 of GDP. It really is. If you use the flow of GDP for only the fiscal period, it really is a primary surplus of 4%. Really is. If you use the correct GDP number. And that, to me, is quite an important thing because it is reported as such. And the numbers are wrong. They're using a flow of income for one period and compare and trying to do a ratio, right, with GDP from a totally different period. So that is wrong. That's my second thing, and I'm finished there.
Any response, Dr. Greenwich? Dr. Greenwich?
Yeah, sorry. Thank you for the comments, caller. And I appreciate the clarity you bring in terms of loss in government revenues. And of course, it means also private sector have been hardly hit. We totally agree on that. In terms of the numbers in central bank, whether you're saying whether it's 2.8 or 4% primary. Of course, these primary savings are used to pay down debt and repair arrears. I will have to go and look at it. I'm not aware that there's an issue, but I don't have them in front of me to go and now go through them. But if I was to draw anything from that, are you referring to this was the period prior to COVID? This is consistent with our General Trust on the Board program. To generate primary savings sufficient enough to pay down debt, pay back arrears, and do some other stuff. So that's fine. Before 2.8, maybe denominator, I don't know, I'll check on it, but wouldn't change the substance of things.
All right. So at this point in time, I want to interject the whole beyond COVID. Now, I've heard some of government's plans. I think you've alluded to them this morning in terms of the capital works, the projects and so on. I want to give people some measure of hope. How do we get out of this hemorrhaging of revenue and you know, the spending and not gaining and, you know, beyond? The whole idea is to make sure that we can fire up all the cylinders of the economy coming out of COVID, if there's such a thing. I want you to speak a bit to that and what that looks like. Something that Barbadians can look forward to and participate right in.
So Corey, you know, we said, first of all, we said that, and we agree that government revenues have been hard hit because of COVID. We say in one instance, the last fiscal year, we lost $500 million, and we expect to lose a large amount this year. Why is that so? It's not because of any policy action on government side, because the economy collapsed. And it's simple, because of COVID. So by the same reasoning, once we do what we have to do, we come up this lockdown with COVID under control, and we continue to work to improve the economy, government revenues are picked back up too. So the revenues is not, the loss in revenues, to what we have to factor in that reduce the fiscal space, is not something that is causing us great concern that, oh, how are we going to get back revenues? In fact, you will see if that was a grave concern, some people might suggest rush to do something on taxes. Not the case, because it's not a tax issue. It is the fact that the economy has collapsed, and therefore it will pick back up, and so will revenues pick back up. The trick, and I keep saying, and I have said, is for us to get out of this period where we get COVID under handle. Then we can get into the things of taking care of the domestic economy and positioning for the open of the rest of the world, doing our domestic capital investment, advancing. A lot of Prime Minister said, and just when she was announcing the recent shutdown, advancing the domestic capital expenditure, doing things in terms of, for example, the rural rehabilitation in Scotland district. She mentioned in that press conference, 12 roads are shovel ready to go once we got that sorted out in terms of the funding there, everything. The school meals on Country Road, gatehouse in Babbitts Water, these are things she mentioned. Welfare building, the British American Building magazine. So getting projects that will soak up employment and provide some sort of economic activity private sector that one can get involved in. And also readying ourselves for when the world opens up, we pick up. Once the bottom line, Corey, once the economy starts to recover, so will government revenues.
A lot of the times we look at the tangible, and the intangible is often very, very important. Things like confidence and so on. One of the things that I am picking up, it has confused me, and I wanted to do a program like this from ever since. You yourself said back in 92, back in 2008, back when 9/11, we saw tremendous financial and economic shock. All of that amounted to a 5% loss, so you said, right? 5% decline. Now, with COVID, we are seeing an 18%, almost a quadrupling, right? We see 90% loss of our main sector, tourism. Yet, I am not picking up the type of panic that we had in 1992. We were talking about devaluation, an 8% cut. I'm not picking up the type of doom and gloom that I was hearing from 2008. I'm not picking up the type of panic that we had with 9/11. Why is that? Is the government showing a brave face? Or is it that you are confident that you've rolled the wicket, you've adjusted the BRA, the tax this, and you put all these things in place with the BERT, the BESS, and the BOSS, right? That we are confident that once COVID is in control, that we can really and truly move forward. What is it?